Protégé Podcast, the career advice, inspiration, and truth you need for your career journey.
Hi, my name is Jordan. You should listen to my dad's podcast. Bye.
I'm Rory Verrett. Welcome to Protégé Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you've enjoyed the past 4 episodes of Protégé Podcast as we try to say thank you to all of you for listening to the show this past year. We had Jackie Welch interview me and talk about Protégé Podcast, the idea and how it came to fruition. I hope all of you that are interested in starting podcasts took some insight from that interview. It's an incredible journey. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of hard work, but it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. So I hope those of you interested in starting podcasts, get started and get on your way, enlightening your market and your world with your ideas and your insights about whatever topic is the focus of your podcast. We also had Valerie Jarrett and Ben Wilson and Mark Tatum, 3 superstars on the show, sharing their insights. And now we're going to get back to some very practical career topic podcasts. As you know, with Protégé Podcast, our theme is career advice, inspiration, and truth. So we had some heavy inspiration over the past few weeks. Now let's get back to some very practical, tactical things you can do in your career. And that's going to be our focus for the next few episodes. Today on the podcast, Calvin Gladney, a friend of mine from Harvard Law School, an extraordinary professional I've had the pleasure of knowing for 20 years. Calvin is the founder of Happier, Better Lawyer, a company dedicated to helping lawyers and other professionals become more entrepreneurial. You don't have to be an entrepreneur to apply entrepreneurial thinking in your career. You could work in a corporate setting, in government, or even a nonprofit and bring the mentality and insights of an entrepreneur to your role in whatever organization you're working at. And Calvin is going to talk about not only the entrepreneurial thinking, but the future of work. What's coming down the pike in the next 20 or 30 years on the landscape of work and why thinking and acting entrepreneurially are so important to your career. I want to give a quick shout out to new listeners in Lisbon, Portugal, a big contingent or one person having a great time binge listening to Protégé Podcast, and to a lot of listeners all across the state of California. California seems to be a place where the podcast is growing in popularity. So thank you to everyone on the left coast for checking in on Protégé Podcast. So up next on Protégé Podcast, Calvin Gladney and thinking like an entrepreneur. I am so happy to welcome a good friend of mine from way back. Calvin Gladney is the founder of Happier, Better Lawyer, and he's here on Protégé Podcast. Calvin, welcome to the show.
My man, don't talk about long-term friends, though, because then we might start dating ourselves, and I'm trying to appear young as much as I can.
Calvin, we have had 70 episodes on Protégé Podcast. You are one of the 3 that I've got some dirt on. Like, I got real dirt. That I could go public with, but you know what? The secret, what's in the past is in the past.
I did send that check, so I'm hoping that it cashes and then we're all fine, like we discussed.
There you go. Calvin, you and I crossed paths at Harvard Law School in the 90s, and we recently had a conversation on a panel about the dynamic career path of entrepreneurs and successful professionals. It was called My Brilliant But Unusual Career at the Celebration of Black Alumni at Harvard Law School. And you were dropping so many gems on the crowd. I was like, you have to come on the podcast and give us a longer narrative about what you do and why it's important for professionals to be entrepreneurial. So first, tell us a little bit about your background and about Happier, Better Lawyer.
Well, I'm going to go way back in terms of background. And I grew up in a small town in New York called Brooklyn. Not sure if you've heard of it, but, you know, it's near Hoboken, New Jersey.
There you go.
And, you know, I like to tell people that, you know, you hear people say, well, you know, people, you know, were born on first base kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I was born outside of the stadium and I didn't know a game was going on. So I grew up in public housing in Brownsville in Brooklyn, and then in Coney Island in Brooklyn. And yes, there is a neighborhood there. So I grew up poor, was lucky enough and blessed enough and, you know, worked hard and had some help, got to Cornell. And then, like you talked about earlier, ultimately got to Harvard Law School. And sort of even going into law school, knew that I wanted to be a businessman one day, or get into business. That was the only sort of thought I had. And I sort of just bounced around in the back of my mind. So ultimately went and worked at a law firm, big law firm for many years, worked at Latham & Watkins, worked as a government attorney for a little bit. And then I was a general counsel of a real estate development company. And as a general counsel, you're essentially the lead lawyer overseeing a bunch of lawyers and actually business people as well. And that's when I really got the bug to kind of make a transition and think about being a full-time business side person. Mm-hmm. Moved. So I was in San Francisco and I moved back to DC. And that's when I started my recovery process to be what I am now, which is a fully recovered attorney where I don't practice law. And so now I'm a combination of just a full-time entrepreneur. I'm a professor at Georgetown. So I teach graduate level students how to be entrepreneurs and to be entrepreneurial. And also through Happier Better Lawyer, I'm essentially an executive coach, online coach, and I do a lot of public speaking to white collar professionals who are either trying to be one day an entrepreneur and leave sort of corporate America, or those who want to be entrepreneurial within an organization, which I call the concept of being an intrapreneur.
Okay, so for today's purposes, though, I want to focus on your particular theory of both entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship and why those skills are so important for the modern professional. So tell us a bit about your theory on why entrepreneurship is so important no matter what job you're in.
Entrepreneurship is important no matter the job you're in because nothing is a given these days. There used to be a world where you could get a job, stay in that job, pretty much have a similar set of skills, not necessarily improve your skill set dramatically, and you'd have that job for life. And whatever your age group is, in this day and age, and whatever your professional affiliation is, there are no guarantees that you're gonna keep that job. And a lot of it has to do not only with outsourcing, but automation and the ability of essentially robots and algorithms to do many of the base tasks that now even white collar professionals do. So if you're sitting at a cubicle right now, you should understand that you are not safe. And we are hurtling towards a world of less and less jobs. And those jobs that are going away include white collar jobs. So we all need to be entrepreneurial, even if we're within an organization, because you need to be ready to make a move. And frankly, as I like to tell people, you need to build a personal brand that's broader than your degree, your current title, or your current position.
Wow, this is like a message from the future. And it's a little scary, sounds like.
It is scary because you have to say, and if you listen to certain futurists, they'll talk about a world without jobs. And so you have to say to yourself, you see the twinklings of that even right now. So, you know, they'll call it the gig economy, the freelancer economy, the Uber economy. There are all these ways where organizations, companies are no longer hiring full-time employees. And this isn't just in the sort of retail, you know, it's not like, you know, my little sister, you know, was complaining the other day that, well, she's trying to get, you know, she's in her early 20s, she's trying to get these little retail jobs. And, you know, older people are trying to, like, you know, support their family on what used to be a cash register job just for a teenager. And so you're in a world now where either there's a lot of competition for a smaller amount of jobs, or your ability to keep a job and actually to grow in that job will really be a function of how entrepreneurial you are and how you're able to take both the mindset of entrepreneurs as well as the tools of entrepreneurs and apply that within your organization.
So that is a powerful notion to think about. It is unsettling. It is real. I have read some similar articles and books about what you're talking about, and you very eloquently put this challenge before all of us. So when we are reading the headlines politically about the coal miner in Kentucky whose job was lost and shipped overseas, or the industry and the factories have closed down or just vaporized into thin air, we look at these jobs that are being eliminated and think it's the blue collar worker that's going to be subject to it. But you're saying you could have the Ivy League degree, you could have 20 years of experience, and automation and changes in the structure of the economy, globalization, all of these things are going to conspire, and you can find yourself as a white collar professional out of a job.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, don't believe everything you hear, read, or see. We lost more retail jobs last year than we lost coal mining jobs. Mm. And if you look back to the downturn, the 2008 recession, I would say that we also statistically lost more middle management jobs, where you could be a guy or a gal working at a title insurance company. You know, you're sort of in middle management. Maybe you have like a VP behind your name and a lot or the like. Those jobs in the middle, where either you're not a subject matter expert, you're not a boss of bosses, or you're not a grunt doing all the work, all of that's going away. And this conversation's not being had in public because it's so scary, and there would be some kind of revolt. Although I'm not sure what the revolt would look like, because it might be just people throwing Post-its out the window because they're white-collar professionals. So, but it's a conversation that needs to be had. And so, you know, I'm saying to the world, my mission, you know, the happier, better mission is to rid the world of frustrated white-collar professionals. And I think the way I want to do that, and sort of my goal to do that, and you know, the honor or privilege of being on this podcast with, you know, lot with your listeners, is to say, how can you tactically be entrepreneurial today? Mm-hmm. Not just the concept, because everybody hears it. You sort of hear these things. You're like, oh, yeah, I should be entrepreneurial. Oh, yeah, I should have a personal brand. Well, how do you actually do that? And how do you do that in these sort of micro ways that it doesn't feel like this big thing when you're like, look, I currently have a job. I'm trying to support my family. I'm trying to occasionally have some fun, hang out with Rory, you know, that kind of thing. Right. Well, how do I add on this entrepreneurship and this entrepreneurial thinking when I'm literally just trying to get my TPS reports in?
That's a great way of framing it. And I want to be clear, we are not on this episode necessarily talking about how you can break away from your corporate job to start a business.
Yep.
What we're talking about is how you can bring entrepreneurial thinking into your corporate, your nonprofit, or your government job, or your small business job. So, Calvin, tell us how you've worked with lawyers and other professionals to bring this thinking at a very tactical, practical level to their careers.
Perfect. Well, I would say, one, to quote the great philosopher, Sean Carter, better known as Jay-Z. And he said in one of his poems, better known as Raps, I'm not a businessman, I'm a businessman. Mm. And you need to apply in your organization as an intrapreneur, apply that sort of thinking and say to yourself, one, I'm going to be my own CEO of my career. And so what that means is you're within an organization and you want to say, no, I'm not going to float along and just take the assignments that come to me and work with the people who decide I'm the person they're going to work with. But you want to actually have a specific vision for your career, a plan to execute on that vision, and then finally some sort of monthly tactics that make that happen. And that's an example of leveraging the mindset of an entrepreneur, because if you think of an entrepreneur and they start a business, they're going to say, what's my vision for that business? What's my business plan to execute on that vision, on that vision? in that business idea? And then finally, tactically, how am I going to operate and do that on a day-to-day and on a monthly basis? And so that's one sort of specific way of thinking, that you are the CEO of your career and thinking about it like an entrepreneur.
And your perspective is that this is something that you don't wait till middle management. You should start thinking about this the day you start your first job in your career.
Absolutely. And one of the things, and you've probably seen it with all the people you've interviewed and talked to, and, you know, even during your great search work that you do, people have these very non-linear careers. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I always tell people when I'm doing sort of executive coaching or just talking with folks is a couple things you need to do. One, you have to start. Two, you need to raise your hand. And three, you need to be ready. Mm. So first of all, it's just the start. And the way you start is put the first foot in front of the other foot. And so you're at your job, you're working a certain position, you have a certain title, and you say, hey, well, I'm going to be more entrepreneurial now. I'm going to act like an intrapreneur. So what's my vision? Where do I want to be 5 years from now? What is that job? What is that position? And frankly, what are those functions? What are those things that I'm doing that I'm either passionate about and or good at? What are those things? And so now I'm going to work backwards from that five-year vision. So the first thing is just start, which is to say, okay, I think I want to be a senior VP doing this type of work in this division of the company. Okay, where am I now? What is the first step for me to move towards that vision? And one of the first steps is actually telling people that's where you want to be. Hmm. That's number one. Number two is to raise your hand. So, you know, look at other people that have moved around in your organization and have moved towards your goal and ask yourself, what were the assignments that they took on that propelled them in that direction? What are the types of projects? Who were the people? Who were the clients? What were the internal projects that they took on that were not customer facing or client facing, but were actually just projects that help the business. Mm. What were those types of things? And now when you're in a room, raise your hand and say, oh yeah, I'm willing to do that thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to take on that extra challenge. I'm willing to work 2 hours on the weekend to do that additional work. I'm willing to take on this assignment that no one's going to take on because it's going to be hard and there's some risk of failure. You got to raise your hand. And that's, again, another way to be entrepreneurial, both sort of in the moment as well as looking forward to move you in a direction. And then finally, I would say, is to be ready. It's sort of like being on whatever sports team. Let's say you're on a basketball team and you're on a bench and you're like the ninth man. Or let's say you're the seventh man. And suddenly there's two injuries to the starters. And, you know, they're like, well, Calvin practices as hard as the starters as if he's going to play, but Calvin never plays. Mm-hmm. But then when there are these two injuries and suddenly it's the first week of the playoffs, and I listened to your Mark Tatum podcast episode the other day, and actually, yep, I went to college with Mark.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if you put that connection together, but
that's right, Cornell.
Cornell. Absolutely. So, you know, you have to say, well, I'm not a starter now, so I'm within this organization and I'm not doing this particular type of project or this particular type of position. But what would happen if one of the starters go down? Mm. Maybe the person gets sick. This actually happened to me. I was general counsel of this real estate development company, which is strictly being the head lawyer. Mm-hmm. But I was doing a lot to kind of understand business. And I was trying to be ready for if there were any opportunities where I could show some business chops and not just be considered a lawyer. And what happened is a starter didn't go down. The starter got really busy. Mm. The executive vice president, there were all these new initiatives that the CEO had. And suddenly the company had raised $100 million equity fund and needed someone to lead the investment of that $100 million. Mm-hmm. And that person would have to manage business side project managers and then go out and negotiate the business side deal with the real estate developers and the companies in which we were going to invest. Mm-hmm. And so I did exactly what I'm, you know, telling folks today, which is I raised my hand and I said, hey, I can do that. I've been negotiating a lot of these deals. I understand, you know, all of the aspects of it. And so I raised my hand and said, you know, don't think of me as just a lawyer. Think about me as a business person who can apply the law as just a tool in my toolkit, but it's not my only tool. Okay. And so that's one thing I would say to folks that are listening today, which is whatever your professional affiliation is or your background or the thing that you've learned in your current job and your current position, think of it as just a tool in your toolkit and try to build a brand that says that you can do more. Mm-hmm. And that would allow you the flexibility to move where you need to move when you need to move.
All right, so let's play armchair psychology, because my theory about a lot of career advice is that we can give all the career advice that's proven to work, that's tested and verified, but it's like dieting advice. The reason why people, you know, are obese or don't exercise has more to do with psychology than it does with knowledge of what's going to help you lose weight or help you stay healthy. You know, I'm from New Orleans, where people I grew up with in my family, food was entertainment. So,
oh, New Orleans. I like to say everything in New Orleans is fried and then they put a sauce on top.
Absolutely. And so, you know, it took me years to not.
Is that why you're 300 pounds, Rory, by the way? I just wanted to.
Hey, man, I got 10.
You've been getting big, bro. You've been getting big.
I got 10 pounds I could lose. But my point is, it took years, decades maybe, for me to stop thinking about food merely as entertainment on every meal. You know, eggs Benedict, and then you got French toast, and then for lunch you got a po' boy, and then dinner you got, I mean, I'm making myself hungry right now, but right. But the point is, why is there a psychological block? This is great advice, but why don't people do this? What's in the way of the professional at Deloitte or Accenture or at a big law firm or, you know, in a nonprofit that prevents them from taking this exact advice and enacting it?
I think the biggest thing is people are thinking too big.
What do you mean?
I think there are micro steps that actually are the road to success. And what happens is, to use your diet analogy, people say, oh, I need to lose 50 pounds. So they think, oh, I need to go do this huge brand new thing that's going to change all the aspects of my life. Mm. And that's going to be the way I'm going to lose this 50 pounds. Or if you put it in the sort of company context, they say, oh, well, I want to become the VP of sales in this particular division. I'm totally going to have to learn all these new categories of industries and all these skill sets that I don't have. And I think psychologically, when you tell your mind, oh, there's this huge nut I need to crack, there's this huge whale I need to, like, you know, drag down, your mind says, you know what, that's way too much. I'm going to go back to that po' boy that I really want to eat. Mm-hmm. And so what I've tried to do, and I try to do this every day as an entrepreneur, is I try to use what I call micro disciplines. Mm. And so if you can decide, here's a sort of everyday example. There are people out there that don't brush their teeth every evening. Mm-hmm. And so it's like this big thing. It's like, well, actually, there's a bunch of health reasons. Everybody knows you should brush your teeth every evening and you should floss. Mm-hmm. And there's still a large percentage of people that don't do that, right? So again, your question of the gap between knowledge and actual execution. Mm-hmm. And so what if you said, well, as opposed to saying, I now, Calvin Gladney, are going to brush my teeth and floss every single day, I say, I, Calvin Gladney, every single day, I'm going to brush one tooth. And people laugh, and it's like, oh, brush one tooth. That's ridiculous. But what I'm doing, so I say, for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to brush one tooth a night. And I do it. It's like, oh, it's easy. Man, I could have brushed more. Nope. Stick with one tooth. Mm-hmm. So now you've built a habit of one tooth. And then you escalate that to two teeth. And then on and on. And so you create micro disciplines that add up to this bigger picture and this bigger goal. And if you do that, that gets you out of the psychology of seeing this big goal that just seems so overwhelming that you just end up having the beignets instead of getting the salad.
That is absolutely astute. And with Protégé Search, when I'm interviewing candidates, I interviewed somebody this week. And she's an extraordinary executive. And she did not have the persona, you know, this notion that you have to have this charisma and this instant magnetism that just comes through the phone. I left the conversation. I was like, wow, this woman is a grinder. Like, this woman has the process discipline, the consistency honed over 20 years in her career. And you see it in the resume. You see manager for 3 years, then director 5 years, then VP. Like, she brings the hard hat to work every day. That competency pays off not only in your short and midterm achievements wherever you are, but over the long term of your career. Boy, it really does separate you from people that, you know, have a lot of razzle dazzle, but really don't have the content, the substance, and that are going to put up the wins every single season, to use a sports analogy. Calvin, give us some tips about how you can bring some process discipline to your career, how our listeners can take very small concepts and apply them consistently to get some of these entrepreneurial or intrapreneurial outcomes in their career.
Good example would be controlling your immediate environment. So again, I say be your own CEO. And, you know, you think of CEO, and it's like you have minions, you have people working for you, you have the big corner office. And so right now you might be sitting at a desk, sitting at a cubicle, you know, maybe you're sitting in a coffee shop listening to this, or you're on your drive to work. And so one thing I've done is I have said, well, I need to control the parts of my environment that I can control 100% or close to 100%. And allow that to both increase my productivity, increase my happiness, and increase my ability to move towards the things I'm trying to move towards. And so a micro example of that is my office and my conference room table. And a lot of folks, you know, whether you're at a desk or whatever it is, you have this sort of pile system. And the pile system, or having lots of papers everywhere. So when I leave my office every single day, my desk is immaculate. And there is zero things, there is nothing on my conference room table. So when I walk into my office every day, that consciously and subconsciously, that environment is telling me that I'm in control, I'm the master of my universe, and I can do and get things done because I am controlling that environment. And so when you're within an organization, there's a lot of things you don't control, but you can control your desk. You can maybe, if you have an office, you can control what your office looks like. And those are kind of micro strategies, because those are things that you can do every single day. And you can say, hey, if I took an extra 5 minutes in the beginning of the day and the end of the day to make sure that my office was immaculate, you've done two things. Not only have you increased your productivity and increased your happiness, as a matter of fact, there's a book on this that I've applied to the sort of office environment, but the book is called The Incredible Magic of Tidying Up, which thinks about just the home space, but you can apply that to your office. But the other thing that that does, it builds a default personal brand that when other people see your space, they're like, this guy's got it all under control. Maybe I can give him this additional assignment, this harder thing that other people are staying away from, this assignment that I think is a little beyond his capacity, but he seems like he keeps the things that he normally does in total control, and I gotta imagine that he's gonna apply that level of discipline, that level of rigor to this new thing I'll give him.
Absolutely. Those small branding moments, what I call signaling moments, are so important, especially if you're in an open environment in your company. I'll give you one thing that I do that's helped me a lot, and that's schedule time to brainstorm. Schedule time to brainstorm. Okay, so everybody thinks, well, yeah, that makes sense. But if you don't put it on your calendar, you probably won't do it. And if you don't couple it with something that you want to do, you probably won't do it. So I like going to the driving range at night. So there's a driving range open at till 9:30 at night here in Potomac. I go twice a week at 8:30. Now, I love going to the driving range, but it's also time when I can think freely. I turn my phone off. It's for 45 minutes. And some really, really incredible ideas have come about from the driving range time. And I know twice a week, I'm going to give myself collectively an hour and a half to think of new ways to serve my clients, new ways to brand myself, new clients I want to pitch, new services I want to offer. And if you don't do that, the rhythm of your week and all the tasks you have are just going to engulf you, and you won't ever have time to think about, why am I doing all of this? What's the next step in my career? How can I, you know, elevate my profile? So that's just one tip. Schedule time to brainstorm and be creative.
And the driving range really is just a kind of metaphor for going to a physical environment where you've given yourself the space to think freely. Mm-hmm. So you could literally, and I do this, you know, I walk outside my office building and walk to the nearest park and just sit on a bench. Or, you know, I'll just walk around, you know, a 10 block radius, and I'm just walking, and whatever comes to me comes to me. So you can apply what you just said, Rory, to whether it's the driving range, you're in an urban environment, or you're just going to walk around your house or walk around your block. You just got to give yourself the space where your brain can then say, hey, I've taken in all these inputs and I just haven't had the time to make the outputs, and just let your brain see where it goes.
I'm going to give you another one. That's kind of one of my little secret tricks, is to drink green tea or your preferred caffeinated beverage before you have a presentation or a pitch or an interview.
Now, are you saying that because I'm sitting here with a chamomile tea right now, or?
I am particular to the matcha green tea from Starbucks.
Oh, okay.
And I have consumed that for probably 18 months. And this sounds crazy. Starbucks ain't paying me to say this.
This episode is brought to you by Starbucks.
No, this is a sustained, I don't know what's in green tea or matcha green tea, but it's a sustained level of energy that coffee spikes you and then brings you down. Green tea kind of gets you up and sustains you, and the come down is gentle and easy, and it's not a crash. And so whenever I have a client presentation,
there's a little bit of caffeine in a green tea.
It's gonna punch in the throat. It's serious.
but
I do it before I have a client pitch. I do it before I have sometimes an interview with a candidate. I schedule big presentations, especially ones that are public, around the consumption of tea, because I know whoever's on the other side of that meeting needs to see lucid, creative, out-of-the-box thinking, poised Rory. I had one today before, you know, this interview. It just helps me to be focused and clear, and I feel like both sides of my brain are working at the same time. The creative side and the logical side are working in tandem. And so everybody may have a routine. For some people, it's working out 2 hours before these big moments. So find the things that get you in a rhythm in your day and make sure you put that on the calendar and in some way institutionalize that into your week and into your months.
You know, that brings me to one thought that I do want to throw out that I think is important, particularly when people are listening to podcasts. There's a bias towards thinking that you can't do these things if you're not an extrovert. And I want to just say to the world right now, because I know the world is listening.
The world is listening.
If you are an introvert, that doesn't mean that you're shy. It means that the energy you need to deal with people in environments is more than other people need. And actually, another way of saying it would be, when you're dealing with people as an introvert, they drain you of energy. Mm-hmm. When you're an extrovert, you get energy from people. Mm-hmm. And so what you need to do is when you're thinking about these tips and thinking about the things you hear from Rory, myself, and other guests, you have to say to yourself, how do I create an environment to prepare myself to do these things where I've built up the energy? And your tea analogy sort of gave me the thought on this, so that even as an introvert, so I'm going to go into this meeting and I had to have a little more energy, or people are going to be coming at me, and as an introvert, that's tiring and exhausting. You need to do the things to build up your energy so that then you're prepared for that environment.
Absolutely. Calvin, where can people find out more about you and about the work you do at Happier Better Lawyer?
Oh, I try to give them many ways to catch me. So if you're on social media, you can find me both on Twitter or on Instagram at @happier_better. You can find a Facebook page at @happierbetterlawyer. Obviously, that is the website as well, happierbetterlawyer.com. And as a matter of fact, you know, I do a little blogging on the Happier Better Lawyer, so you can, you know, get these kind of inspirational tips and very sort of specific tactics and strategies that I blog about. And actually, maybe I'll offer up something that, you know, if you're listeners, since only your listeners will really know about this, I've actually created a sort of 7-step system to build a personal brand that you can do in a linear basis, kind of irrespective of where you are on your career stage. And if anybody emails me in my email, or if you send it, you know, tweet at me or send me an IG message or the like, but my email is calvin@happierbetterlawyer.com. So anybody emails me and says, send me that personal brand system infographic. It's one page, you know, it's professionally done, and it just sort of summarizes, you know, exactly the steps you need to take to build a personal brand, if that's something that people should do. And I think it is, because if you're going to be an intrapreneur, if you're going to be entrepreneurial and leverage the mindset of entrepreneurs within a company, you need to build a personal brand, and this will give it to you.
Calvin Gladney is a real estate investor, a former general counsel, a professor, and the founder of Happier Better Lawyer, and a longtime friend of mine. Calvin, thank you for stopping by Protégé Podcast.
Thank you, Roy. It was an honor and a privilege, and hope to see you soon. And we'll have a green tea.
Absolutely. Thank you for tuning in to Protégé Podcast. Please check us out on social media at Protégé Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and let us know your thoughts on topics we can cover on the next Protégé Podcast.